A market wrap, please.
How would you like it?
A bit of market news, plenty of company insight, lashings of expert commentary. Not too heavy on the economics, though.
There you go.
Market Wrap on Share Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Market Wrap. I'm Steve Clark. Over the next half hour, I'm going to run through the day's most interesting news affecting markets, companies and economies. And to help put the day's events in context, I'm joined by Share Radio's senior analyst, Ed Bowsher. Ed, what's the story that caught your attention most today?
Well, it's an interesting day. Markets have actually been fairly quiet, fairly flat, but you feel there's potential for a fairly big move next week because everyone's watching what's going on in Washington, D.C. with Donald Trump and the healthcare proposals. And depending how that goes, you could see some good moves on Monday.
Okay, well, before we look at those in more detail, here's a roundup of the day's news. The US healthcare debate is dominating the agenda as markets await the results of a vote on Trump care this evening, with the outcome being viewed by investors as a key test of the US president's ability to deliver on his agenda. Should Donald Trump fall at this first hurdle, question marks will be raised over his ability to implement his pro-business agenda. British house building company Crest Nicholson has been hit with a shareholder rebellion over its latest pay package for directors. 58% of shareholders voted against the remuneration proposals. Despite that, the vote is non-binding and the company intends to push ahead with its original plan. The Cooperative Bank says a number of credible bidders are eyeing a takeover. The struggling high street bank with 4 million customers has set a deadline of mid-April for preliminary offers. Banco Sabadell and Secure Trust have pulled out of a possible offer, while Metro Bank says it's only interested in parts of the business. In the city, the FTSE 100 closed marginally down at 7,336, and that's down 4 points in all. So, Ed, Trump's ultimatum to Congress was really sort of back my plan, repeal Obamacare, or I move on to, well, what tax? But what's the mood over there?
It's sort of uncertain. You sort of feel that everyone's in a holding pattern, waiting to see what will come. Trump's big problem is that part of the Republican Party feels that his new health proposals, or in really more Paul Ryan's new health care proposals, are too left-wing, too collectivist. And then the more moderate Republicans think that the proposals are too right-wing and are stripping away too many rights and benefits for ordinary Americans. So it's going to be tough for Trump to get this proposal through. But I guess this ultimatum that if he doesn't get it through, he'll move on, which effectively means Obamacare will continue to be the law, perhaps for months or years to come. That ultimatum may make a difference. And you might wonder, what's this got to do with markets? Well, it is this feeling that if he can't do this, will he be able to do the tax cuts? Will he be able to do the infrastructure spending? Markets, I think, since November have sort of assumed that Trump would have no problem cutting taxes, doing infrastructure spending, and at the same time have assumed that actually the protectionism won't be as bad as people feared. And maybe that's not actually true.
Has it actually affected the markets today? As you said, it's actually been affecting them, what, over the last few days, last week. What about today?
Today, actually, the S&P, the flagship US index, is up a little bit, not a lot. It's up a little bit, 0.2% after falls we've had earlier on this week. But, you know, I think Monday is actually the one to watch out for. And of course, let's not forget that US markets, in many people's eyes, are overvalued. If you look at something called the CAPE ratio, the cyclically assisted price earnings ratio, I won't even bother to explain what that is. But the important point is it's currently on 29, and it's only been higher than that in 1929. Just before the Wall Street crash, and around 2000 when there was another crash. Not
it's a bit gloomy, Ed.
It's a bit gloomy. And I think the point I'm making is when prices seem perhaps on the high side, it doesn't take much to get people to sell. So I think you've got a lot of people thinking, oh, gosh, prices seem a little high, but they don't want to sell up before the bull run ends. They want to get as much profit as they can, but they've got their fingers nervously over the sell button, and it doesn't take much to get them to press that button.
Yeah, it's impossible viewing into the crystal ball on these things, but it does make you wonder if there is no passage of this through today and markets perhaps don't get much of a chance to react today, including those in the US. People come in on Monday and go, whoops, this really isn't the plan as we saw it.
That may well happen. I mean, of course, no guarantees. Markets are forever surprising. I've been surprised so many times. Maybe this is all priced in already, but I think more likely as we will see some market falls on Monday.
Yeah, done. Let's move on to what else is going on in the markets and getting into some of the nitty-gritty. Engineering conglomerate Smiths Group, half-one results, boosted by the weak pound. What do you see in the results there?
Well, they're pretty good at face value. Revenue's up actually 18%, which is pretty massive. But once you take out the weaker pound, once you do it in constant currency terms, the revenues are flatter. But overall, good results. Smiths Group is a bit of an old-fashioned conglomerate. They do various healthcare products. They do sort of engineering services for the oil industry. They do detection services at airports and other stuff as well. They haven't had a great time in recent years. A new CEO came in recently. And these results are suggesting he's getting things onto the right track. Detection's going well. And crucially, the profit margins are up by over 1 percentage point. That's the encouraging thing. And so profits are up more than revenues are up. And that's why the shares are up about 2.5% today, £15.93. I mean, fine, I think many people thought that the boss was already doing a good job, but confirms it today. Good to see the price rising some more. But I wouldn't particularly want to buy now myself. I feel it's a bit pricey. And there's always this background issue there. Should the company split up into various its various components?
It sounds a very disparate group of activities, doesn't it?
It is. But the current management, very firm, they don't want to do that.
OK, so that's not on the agenda for the moment, we'll assume. So let's move on to Crest Nicholson. This is interesting, I must say. An AGM vote, 58% of votes were against the pay package for senior executives, but the company is going to ignore them anyway. We've certainly seen that before. So much for shareholder power, then.
Indeed. And I think the big question is, does the government need to change the law and make such votes binding? And that's my feeling. The argument against, of course, is you're effectively forcing companies to potentially retrospectively rewrite contracts of bosses. So maybe we'd have to phase such a change in and put in provisions in contracts saying, well, perhaps they could be this deal could be affected by AGM votes. But it's not great. It'll only heighten the concern around this issue. And then today we've also had news that John Fallon, the boss at Pearson, his pay in 2016 was 20% higher than 2015. I won't need to remind you, Steve Pearson has been struggling a lot over the last 2 or 3 years. Things got even worse at the back end of 2016. It's mainly an educational publisher now. That market's not going well in the US. People say, why on earth is this man getting a 20% pay rise when things aren't going well? It's almost a reward for failure.
Indeed. And you know, coming back to the case of Crest Nicholson, you know, we say things like this is terrible PR for the company, and yet companies go on and do this seemingly again and again, as you've observed. I think also the feeling was amongst voters, apparently, was that the targets the management has set itself were too easy. They set the targets, they met the targets. Companies are sort of marking their own homework here, aren't they?
They are. They set themselves easy targets, and they often set themselves targets which actually provide incentives for management to do the wrong thing. Often the targets are set around earnings per share, you know, particular measurement of profit. Well, you can game earnings per share quite easily. You just buy another business that can boost earnings per share. You buy back shares already on the market. Actually, a lot of these incentives can encourage short-term behaviour, don't encourage businesses to invest for the long term. So it may even be part of the cause of the big productivity riddle we have in the UK, that we just can't get productivity to rise as fast as we like. I'm not saying it's the only cause, but it may be part of the problem.
There's certainly short-termism at work there, one might think. Let's move on to Co-op Bank, which says several credible potential buyers have come forward since the bank was put itself up for sale in February. I mean, it's quite interesting, this, isn't it? In as much as, you know, we saw yesterday with RBS selling off branches. I know there's more to a bank than branches, but it does make you wonder, you know, who's buying all this? Are we overbanked, really, I suppose?
I think we probably are overbanked. We do have too many branches. Although, as we said last night, Metro Bank, one of the upstarts, think branches are useful and a good marketing tools. But Co-op Bank, I mean, I'm actually surprised by this revelation today that several credible buyers are interested. Co-op Bank looks a really weak business now. If they don't find a buyer, they need to raise about £750 million to keep them afloat. The brand is seriously tarnished. Their branch network, I don't think, is that brilliant in terms of locations and so forth. So why would you want to buy? But apparently some people are. I suspect if a deal does go through, it's going to be for a pretty low consideration. I'm also intrigued as to who might be interested. I mean, maybe Santander might want to expand some more. They've been quite aggressive. Maybe CYBG, who own Clydesdale in Yorkshire, or maybe some overseas bank. But gosh, I'm not convinced it's a sensible move.
So if a deal does go through, you think basically it's going to be a knockdown price?
I think so, yes.
OK. Let's just move on to Alliance Trust, a large investment trust, underperforms in the final year. Before overhaul, but does have a new management team.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been through a very traumatic last couple of years. Of course, Alliance Trust used to be run by Catherine Garrett Cox, a very famous fund manager,
indeed,
who did very well for a while, and then just the performance went off the boil. The American hedge fund Elliott came in to shake things up. It took them a while to win their battle, but they're now very much in control. In fact, they've done so well, they're now selling out. They've had their fun, if you like, made their money, and a completely new sort of fund management structure. The people who are making the investments, it's a completely different bunch of people, and it's structured in a completely different way. But under the old regime, last year, the net asset value, the value of the underlying portfolio, rose 21%, which is pretty good at face value, but it was 6% below the benchmark, the All Country World Index. So still really disappointing. So the new fund management, the new stock pickers, they're going to have to do better to justify recent rises in the share price, because the share price hasn't just been driven by that rise in net asset value. Investors have actually thought, gosh, we think these guys are going to do better. So the share price has risen by more than the underlying value of the portfolio.
OK, Ed, thanks very much. But stay with us, because we'll be back with more after this short break.
A market wrap, please.
How would you like it?
A bit of market news, plenty of company insight, lashings of expert commentary. Not too heavy on the economics, though.
There you go.
Market Wrap on Share Radio.
Yes, welcome back. Share Radio Evening Show with me, Steve Clark, and the Markets Wrap with our senior investment analyst, Ed Bauscher, who's sitting opposite me and raring to go. We're going to pick it up, Ed, because plenty happening today with the restaurant group, better known, I think, as owner of a Frankie and Benny's, hit by a downgrade.
Yes, a downgrade from an analyst called Ned Hammond at Berenberg. I think it's pushed the shares down about 2% tonight. Restaurant Group has been having a tough time in recent years. Their brands, not just Frankie and Benny's, but Garfunkel's, Chiquito, not that strong, not been doing that well. This analyst is saying, well, they're doing some sensible things. Their new strategy, in quotes, is relatively credible, but he feels the company still has a tough task ahead, and he reckons that really to start boosting volumes, the company's going to need to cut prices by between 10 and 20%. And if he's right, that clearly isn't great news for the share. So I think that's helped to pull the share price down today. I think investing in restaurant chains can make sense. You can see quite high growth sometimes, but none of these brands are that exciting at the moment. So I would be reluctant to get involved, I think.
Yeah, 20% overpriced. That's massive. Well, I don't think Ned will be getting any free restaurant tokens from them in the foreseeable future. Let's move on to this story from the Eurozone, which I must say I found very interesting myself. It says Eurozone businesses have registered their fastest growth rate in almost 6 years, and that's according to Markit's latest Purchasing Managers Index. I mean, Markit very well respected. The PMI is a very well respected guide, is up to 56.7, which is well in positive territory and up from February.
Absolutely, and much better than analysts were expecting. There definitely seems to be a bit of a mood change on Europe at the moment. 3 months ago, everyone was terribly worried about, you know, all the long-standing problems we know about the euro and sclerosis in the European economy, then compounded by worries that we've got three tough elections this year, Netherlands now out of the way, but France and Germany, and potential of real political risk in Europe following on from Brexit and Donald Trump. And I think at least some investors are beginning to think, well, perhaps we've overestimated the political risk. And actually, yes, the Eurozone has struggled for many years, but we are finally seeing the economy beginning to pick up thanks to low interest rates and quantitative easing. And maybe it's time to get involved. And I think these PMI figures today sort of confirm that story, and particularly strong in Germany. No surprise there. It's still the sort of economic powerhouse of the Eurozone.
Yeah, it's just amazing, the strength of the German economy. And once again, it's the star performer here, up nearly a full point in their PMI.
Just one more thing. Sorry, Steve, if you don't mind, just to say on the political side of it as well, my view is that France, yes, we still need to be worried. There is a chance Le Pen might win. So not a big chance, but a little chance. We need to worry about that. But I'm not really worried about Germany at all in September. I don't see any prospect of a particularly sort of unorthodox government taking control there at all.
Yeah, it would be a massive, massive shock if Angela Merkel was turfed out. And she's been such an adaptable politician over the years that it becomes increasingly hard to see it. Although I know Martin Schulz is said to be going to give her a run for her money.
But he's a pretty mainstream social democrat. You know, it's not a Le Pen or a Trump.
Yeah, yeah. So a very different case perhaps to France there. Barclays are saying they no longer expect euro-dollar parity this year. Yeah, what's behind that? Are they making the same reading of European politics as you've just done?
That is a part of it, yes. Because they were expecting parity at some point this year. They're now saying a political risk less likely. And they're saying that their sort of expectation is the euro's lowest point will be at $1.03 in the fourth quarter of this year. That they're also thinking, they're also looking at it from the dollar side of the equation, if you like. It's not just that the euro might be a bit stronger than they previously thought. It's also that they think the dollar might be a bit weaker, if you like. They think there's a chance that inflation could pick up this year under Trump, and that could damage the dollar. So that's to watch out for. 2018, though, they're not ruling out this euro-dollar parity in the end. And they think political risk actually could pick up again in Europe next year around Italy and around Greek debt. So we shall see.
I'm quite interested in this story because I have been a sufferer from very poor broadband as I live out in the sticks outside London. And Ofcom has threatened broadband providers with automatic compensation payments for poor service. I guess the question in my mind is, who is the provider, though? Because everything comes over those BT/Openreach lines, even though if you're buying it off a Virgin or Plusnet or whomever.
I think in terms of this story, the idea is that you would get compensation from the company that you deal with, whether it's Plusnet or whoever. I guess if it's BT's fault, then it's up to the likes of Plusnet and TalkTalk to get compensation from BT down the line. The thing that I find slightly intriguing about this, it sounds like a great idea. Clearly, we'd all favour automatic fast compensation for when things go wrong. But of course, you'll still surely get disputes about whether compensation is justified or whether the engineer was actually late. Did whoever, Sky, take 48 hours to get your broadband fixed? That, I think, is perhaps the potential problem. But Ofcom clearly getting tough. BT, Sky and Virgin had previously made a proposal to sort of deal with these concerns. Ofcom saying not good enough, and shares in BT are down today a fair bit, although it may not just being driven by this story. There may be other factors as well.
OK, well, those people with poor broadband will be absolutely delighted to hear that, I'm sure, wherever they are in the country, but perhaps not so great if you're a shareholder in one of those providers.
Indeed.
Let's turn to Acacia Mining. The Tanzanian government have announced a ban on gold concentrate exports. I'm not aware. What do they mean by gold concentrate, actually?
Well, I'm not an expert on this, but
I'm just glad to know that you're puzzled as well.
Indeed. This is how I do understand
it. Sounds like something you add to a cocktail. You know,
yes. It is, if you like, as I understand it, the sort of the raw gold. Okay. It's still there is some sort of processing work further down the line. And what the Tanzanian government is saying, they're fed up with the gold concentrate being exported and then the actual value-adding work being done elsewhere. Right. So they want that work to stay in Tanzania. So that's why they've announced this ban on gold concentrate exports early this month. And it's been a big problem for Acacia Mining because a big chunk of their business is gold mining in Tanzania. And what the company has said today is that the loss it's had so far is costing around $1 million a day, and that's about about 30% of the company's revenues. Now, I've no idea how quickly they could change their sort of business practices to satisfy the Tanzanian government, or whether the Tanzanian government will back down on this, but it's clearly a problem. Acacia shares down today about 8p at £4.56, so not a huge fall, but then we've already known for a month or so that the Tanzanian government had introduced this ban. Before that came in, the shares were at about £5.50, now at about £4.60, but still not great. And at the same time, it's not been a great month for Acacia. They were planning to merge with a Canadian firm called Endeavour. Endeavour walked away the other day, so not good news all round, really.
Yeah, that sounds like a tough month for Acacia. Let's stay with the commodities, at least the service side of it. Lamprell, an oil services company, have called 2017 their toughest year yet.
Yes, so perhaps not a great surprise, really, so, given the troubles and perils of the oil industry. So in 2016, their profits came down from $77 million to $9 million. And as you said, Steve, they're saying that they think 2017 could be even tougher, which is perhaps a bit of a surprise, given that we are seeing the oil price has at least come off its lows, if you like.
Yeah.
But they're still clearly pretty conservative and worried. And it's perhaps that warning about what 2017 might bring that pushed the share price down earlier on today, although it has closed effectively flat, just up a tiny amount tonight.
We've got a couple of minutes as it's Friday afternoon. What are you looking forward to next week?
Yeah, there's some interesting ones next week. I think on Tuesday, one I'll be looking out for is results from an investment trust, Woodford Patient Capital Trust. Now, I think most of our listeners will have heard of Neil Woodford, an amazingly successful income stock investor. But when he set up his own Woodford business, he then launched the Woodford Patient Capital Trust, which is not investing in income stocks at all. It's investing in young growth businesses, some of which aren't even listed on the stock market. Neil Woodford's been saying it's one of the UK economy's problems, is that too often new innovations happen and no one in the UK is willing to invest and grow them. So we make the discovery in a lab in Cambridge or Manchester, wherever it may be, and then the Americans commercialise it and make the money. Well, Woodford Patient Capital hopes to can help change that trend. Having said that, it's obviously early days, but the performance of the trust so far hasn't been brilliant. I think some people are saying maybe Neil Woodford should stick to his knitting, focus on the income investing that he knows and loves. On the other hand, still early days, and maybe over 10 years he'll do well. I should declare I have a small number of shares myself.
Okay. Ed Bowsher, thanks very much for your analysis this afternoon. Let's just wrap up the markets for you. The FTSE 100 closed at 7,337, virtually unchanged on the day, down 1.2% on the week. The biggest rises were Smiths Group, which we were talking about, up 2.9%. Bank America, 2%. Informa, 1.8%. The biggest fallers, Smurfit, down 3.2%. Ashtead Group, 2.4%. BT Group, 1.7%. In Europe, the German DAX closed up 0.2%. The CAC 40 in France finished down 0.2%. Not big moves there. The Spanish IBEX was down 0.2% also. And the Italian MIB ended up, but just fractionally also, at 0.1%. In New York, a short time ago, the Dow Jones was unchanged on the day and the S&P 500 was trading up 0.3%. No doubt waiting to hear more on that Obamacare vote. Brent crude oil was recently up 0.2% at $50.64 a barrel. On the foreign exchange markets, the pound is down 0.2% against the dollar. Against the euro, the pound's down 0.5%. We'll be back with Market Wrap on Monday. Simon Rose will be back then, and he'll be joined once again by Ed Bowsher.